This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living. I am Meera Sivasothi. Joining me today is consultant orthopedic surgeon from Sunway Medical Center, Dr. Suhail Suresh. And Dr. Suhail is going to talk to me about living with osteoarthritis. Now, osteoarthritis is the most common arthritis, which affects millions of people worldwide. And that is something we're going to be discussing today. Now, if you have a question for Dr. Suhail, do call us on 77-333-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Welcome to the show, Dr. Suhail. How are you today?
Good evening, Meera. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for having me again on BFM, Meera. I'm doing good. Hope you are well too.
We are well. How has the pandemic been? I mean, I've not spoken to you for a very long time, Dr. Suhail. How's the pandemic? How did all of you live through the pandemic as orthopedic surgeons?
Well, I think just like everyone else who went through a rough time, I think all the orthopedic surgeons themselves had some amount of anxiety to deal with. We could not turn away our patients. We still had patients coming in with trauma, patients who needed elective surgeries. We did take precautions, and thankfully, they're all still around. So, yeah. Good.
Survived it.
Yeah. Yeah,
And patients are coming back now. I think a lot of people delayed their, consultations with the clinicians. Are they coming back now to see you?
Yeah, most of our old patients are back. We've been getting newer patients. Unfortunately, some of them have missed their follow-ups. Some of them have delayed their treatment. So there's a pent-up amount of patients who have come back with delayed presentations of some problem or the other. And also some of us have working together with the Ministry of Health to help ease the backlog of patients in the government hospitals as well. So the government is also trying to do its best to help the people.
Okay. We're talking about osteoarthritis today. How would you best describe this to, for those of us who don't really understand what it is?
Interestingly, that's how most patients ask. Can you look into their joints? So if I could put things into perspective, if you could imagine, the simplest thing to do is to sit in your room. And if you look at the four walls and the ceiling and the floor, and imagine this whole room space is your joint. And the pillars in the room are your ligaments and muscles. And then the space inside is filled with joint fluid. Now, the wallpaper or the painting on the wall of your room is essentially what we call as the synovium or the filter that produces fluid inside the joint. And this continues to happen throughout our life, from birth till the day we die. So this synovium occasionally becomes swollen because of trauma, because of inflammation. And the cartilage inside the joint is supposedly a very beautiful structure. It's supposed to look like pearl, soft and able to resist tension and also friction. So inside the joint, you have cartilage, you have a bit of bone, you have the synovium or the lining, and as well as the ligaments in the joint. So in osteoarthritis, what actually happens is this cartilage undergoes degeneration. So there are different stages. There are four different stages. But to begin with, this cartilage becomes soft. It breaks up, and then eventually it becomes very thin. And in that process, the fluid which is inside this joint, which is only about 2 to 5 mL of fluid, which acts as a thick lubricant fluid. It is high viscosity. But with age and with the inflammation, this viscosity drops. Hence, the lubrication effect becomes lesser. And that, with the forces that are around the knee, makes the cartilage become worn off, and eventually the bone becomes exposed. So at the end of the day, you have a thickened synovium or inflamed tissue. You have less viscous or very fluid liquid. and you have loss of cartilage, and then pain becomes a major problem.
And this is inevitable, Dr. Sohail. This is going to happen with wear and tear. You know, we're all going to be living longer, I'm assuming. And does that mean that most of us will have osteoarthritis at some point?
Yep. Yeah, just like you and I, as long as we continue to live, this process of movement will take place and this friction will go on and the cartilage will degenerate. The question is whether it's going to happen at 50, 60, 70, or 80 or 90, depending on how we look after it. It will eventually happen. It is something that will always happen in everyone. The only question is to what degree and at what age it becomes evident.
How does it differ from one person to the other?
Okay, so let's assume you have two individuals. One is a person who exercises well, looks after his joint or her joint, has got good muscle bulk, protects his or her joint well, and then he's not overweight, and then also exercise as well, this person will have a better cartilage, better joint as compared to another person. Now, having said that, osteoarthritis is divided into two major groups. One is primary osteoarthritis, which just happens to anyone because of time lapse. That is because of age. Whereas secondary osteoarthritis is an osteoarthritis where it happens because of some other medical problem. For instance, somebody who has got a poorly controlled gout, or somebody who has got bad rheumatoid arthritis, somebody who has had a bad injury to the joint from a motor vehicle accident or a bad fall. So these patients are in the second group, which we call as secondary osteoarthritis. It is actually interesting to take note that, you know, in Malaysia, we have 1 in 3 persons above the age of 55 years old having osteoarthritis. And in Greater KL itself, the studies prove up to 30.8% of patients above 55 years old have got osteoarthritis. That's a big number. You can imagine as our population gets older, this figure is only going to become more and more. Worldwide, there are about 500 million people with osteoarthritis. Unfortunately, females make up a bigger group. The ratio between females to males is about 3.5 to 1. Hence the question that people always ask, why another medical problem more towards ladies?
Because we slave.
No, not really. Ladies do a lot of good stuff. Okay. So,
and that's movement, right? And that is movement. I mean,
exactly.
you spoke about, and that's why I meant by slave. I mean, we run around.
We do a million things compared
to our male counterparts. Don't you agree?
I agree. But there are a few other things that make a female more vulnerable compared to male. One, for one, to start with, is the menstrual system in a female where the estrogen hormones are high. And whenever the hormones are higher, there is generally a higher laxity of ligaments within the joint. So if you take across the board, among all athletes in any sports organization, there are usually slightly higher females who get ligament injuries as compared to males because they have got much more lax ligaments. So when you have lax ligaments, the ligaments which are slightly loose compared to the male counterparts, the joints are less stable, hence they are more prone to injuries and the cartilage gets degenerated. That's the first group.
But Dr. Sohail, most women with higher estrogen levels are those in their productive years.
Yes. So if you start in the beginning, right from the menstrual age itself, right from the time they become when they attain menarche onwards, the estrogen levels are slightly high, or definitely higher. So, and when that cycle goes up and down, their ligaments tend to become more and more lax. So that's one first group. The second group is when ladies attain menopause, their weight control becomes a problem. And suddenly there is a sudden surge in increase in body weight. on top of the fact that they have been, like what you were saying, doing so much of work, and then those joints are unable to take the body weight anymore, and then there's a sudden increase in patients who develop osteoarthritis at that age. So there are two major, I mean, these are all hypotheses, but basically, if you look at all research, that's the two main things that point to ladies getting more osteoarthritis compared to men. But this is for primary osteoarthritis, not for secondary. So if you look at gout, the issue is different. Post-traumatic, it's a different picture altogether. But for primary osteoarthritis, ladies are much more common.
Okay. There is a misconception that physical activity is linked to osteoarthritis. And we'll come back and we'll discuss that coming up next. If you have a question for us on osteoarthritis, please call us. It's 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Dr. Suhail will be happy to answer some of those questions. So a lot more discussions around this topic and how to prevent it, perhaps. Can we even reverse it? I don't know. Dr. Suhail will help answer some of those questions. Coming up next on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. It's Health and Living. On the line with me, Dr. Suhail Suresh, consultant orthopedic surgeon from Sunway Medical Center. We're discussing living with osteoarthritis. It's interesting that you've spoken about, you know, how the structure of the joint is. You've got cartilage, you've got bone, you've got synovial fluid, you've got ligaments, and all of that determines how well the joint actually functions. And osteoarthritis is when, you know, this protective cartilage that cushions the ends of the bones actually wears down over time. It's also, Dr. Suhail has spoken about how there is a primary osteoarthritis and secondary osteoarthritis. Most people have primary osteoarthritis due to wear and tear. As you said, women are more prone to this, 1 in 3 above the age of 55, I think you were saying in Malaysia. That's a third of us. And for women, you know, hormones play a big part in your productive years. Hormones play a big part in osteoarthritis when it comes to weight, when you hit menopause and move on from there. And secondary osteoarthritis, of course, is due to other conditions such as gout and other issues that come along with it that probably will exacerbate the osteoarthritis situation. So inevitably, I think all of us who are living longer now will suffer from osteoarthritis at some pain at some point. But Dr. Suhail, the pain is what is, you know, which is the biggest challenge for most people. Am I correct?
Yeah, I mean, There are two major presentations when somebody has osteoarthritis. First is pain. Second is a disability or deformity. Now, pain can be very, very troubling. With pain, mobility becomes reduced. And when there is poor mobility, there is significant functional decline. There's loss of participation. There is loss of quality of life. And in my practice, when I see patients, interestingly, it's not the ability for someone to take them out is a problem. It's not the finances which is a problem, but everything that they want to do in their life is dictated by their need. For example, if they wanted to visit their kids' home, they must determine that that house doesn't have stairs. If they wanted to go for a dinner out in a mall, they must make sure that the car or the transportation arrives as close as possible to the entrance of the place. So basically, this everything in their life is dictated by their ability of the knee, and that reduces the quality of life. And at that age of 60, 70 years old, if your quality of life is poor, that adds on to you feeling down, feeling disturbed, feeling worthless. So yeah, so you need mobility. Now, I want to go back to one other thing about this joint. Joints were created by God for us to move. So if you don't move, your joint will never hurt. So you need a good pair of joints in order to have mobility. So it's just like having a beautiful car with a good engine which runs from 0 to 1 minute, 1 minute over 100 kilometers or whatever you call it. But if you can't open the door of the car and get inside, and if the hinges are spoiled, what's the point of having a good car? Mm-hmm. So similarly, if you may have a good heart, a strong heart, you may have
a good set of lungs, but if your joints are poor, you're going to be confined to the chair, you're going to be confined to your home. So what kind of quality of life are you looking at? So yes, back to the question whether pain is a problem. Yes, pain is a major issue that causes a lot of our patients to seek treatment. Unfortunately, some of them are burdened by the fact that they don't know enough or have not had enough consultations from people, professional people, and hence they delay their treatment, which brings us to another set of questions.
There is this misconception that physical activity is linked to osteoarthritis. Dr. Suhail, you want to elaborate a little bit on that. Let's take running for an example. Those who run, call it the runner's knee. Is there really a link between physical activity and osteoarthritis?
Actually, if one is running and if they train themselves well, if they've got good muscle bulk to protect, to withstand their body weight, to protect their knees, they've got good ligaments, they train well, they put on good shoe wear, and they run on the appropriate running areas, I don't think that itself is an issue. The issue is when we do not have, I give you an example, a 40-year-old lady who is, let's say, 85, 90 kilograms, walks into a clinic and the doctor tells her, you look obese, go and get exercise done. She goes out tomorrow, buys a pair of shoes and goes to a neighborhood road and starts running on the road for half an hour for the next 1 week or 2 weeks. I'm sure she will end up in a doctor's clinic 2 weeks later with severe knee pain, which we see more very often. So again, the physical activity is all right, but it has to be done in the right form. So if my knees are bad, I shouldn't be running then. I should be looking at swimming. I should be looking at cycling. I should be looking at stretching exercises. I should be looking at yoga, tai chi. There's so many other exercises that one can do apart from just running. So yes, running is possible, provided your joints are okay.
Okay, and I suppose option four, 85-year-old lady, is to lose some weight first, perhaps, before attempting to run. That could be a possibility. You don't have to write off running altogether.
No, yeah, true. So you reduce your weight, do exercises to strengthen your thigh muscles, your quadriceps, your hamstring, your calf muscles, get appropriate shoe wear. And then you can start running. If you don't want to run, then you can dance. You can do other forms of exercises.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, 2 days ago I was giving a lecture on amazing living, and an 85-year-old lady was doing a twist. So brilliant.
I know, right? Did you feel bad? I'm sure you did.
I hope I can do that in 85.
Yeah, I wish I could do it now. question from Berlinda. Does diet have anything to do with the onset of different types of arthritis? Say, a vegan or a vegetarian, are they more prone to arthritis as compared to other people who eat meat and fish, for an example?
As of now, there's no data to show that if you're a vegan or if you're a vegetarian, you're less or more prone to getting osteoarthritis of the knee. But if someone has got osteoarthritis of knee as a result of high uric acid or gouty arthritis, they may have a higher chance of getting or worsening the osteoarthritis as a result of consuming lots of red meat or nuts or any form of excessive amounts of beans. Yes.
So the gout can bring about osteoarthritis, you're saying?
Yes. Okay. If someone walks into my clinic and if it is a male patient, most of the time it is, if they have got osteoarthritis, it's either going to be because of post-trauma of injuries or they're going to be men who have had gout before.
Okay. And are you seeing younger patients with this? Because I'm thinking our diets have gone out the window. I mean, we're moving even less. Are you seeing younger people with, primary or secondary osteoarthritis?
More of the younger group people are usually from the secondary osteoarthritis,
okay.
patients who have had rheumatoid arthritis or, you know, post-trauma injury kind of patients, yeah.
Okay. What about, you know, younger people now? I mean, just about every other person I know who's been actively involved playing games and all of that seems to have an ACL injury. Are they at high risk of developing osteoarthritis in subsequent years? And what, you know, and what are their options?
In youngsters who have got ligament injuries and untreated ligament injuries, they have got a higher chance of getting osteoarthritis. Going back to ACL, there are two groups. One is assuming a 20-year-old young gentleman plays football and then tears his ACL or anterior cruciate ligament and does not get it rectified, does not get it treated, and continues to play ACL, he will have much more cartilage injuries. He will have meniscus injuries, and that will definitely predispose him to getting osteoarthritis. That's one. Number two, if that same patient has had his ACL reconstructed and undergoes proper rehabilitation, he can probably go back and play the original level of sports and doesn't necessarily need to worry about getting ACL within the shortest period.
And that will reduce the burden on the cartilage as well.
Yes, definitely, because it gives him a stable joint. And for a stable, for a knee to be stable, it has to have good muscle and good ligaments.
Okay. We have a question from Harris. I have knee osteoarthritis in both my legs. Very painful for me to walk for long periods of time. I have been advised to do a total knee replacement. Is it better to do one leg first or do both at one time? I've been having knee problems for the last 8 years, progressing every year. Your thoughts, Dr. Swail?
Okay. Interesting, Harris. Good question. With regards to osteoarthritis, bilateral osteoarthritis, that means somebody who has got both their knees affected. Well, most of the time, we prefer to do one knee at a time, but there's a caveat to that. So if I have not got a severe both knee, so if both my knees are reasonably straight and both my knees are painful, and I'm at anywhere 70 and above and I've got multiple medical problems, most of the consultants will tell you, or most of the physicians will tell you, do one at a time. But if you have got severe bowing of knees, you straighten one knee, you still can't go for rehab. You still have another knee which is severely bowed. It's going to only slow you down. So for those kind of patients, probably it's better to do both at one time. Why do one at a time? Why do both at one time? When you do one at a time, your risks for risks during the surgery is much lesser. Why? Because the surgery time is lesser. The risk of getting fat embolisms is lesser. Risk of getting deep vein thrombosis is lesser. Your recuperation is a bit faster. Your hospital stay is faster. So you've got one knee done, you're stable, you're going, you get another knee done. The question usually is, how soon can I get my next knee done? The earliest is 6 weeks. But if you've got both your knees severely bowed, and if you do not have multiple medical problems, and if you are comfortable, by all means, have both done together.
Okay. I will come back to new developments or new machines when it comes to total knee replacements, Dr. Suhail. I mean, I would have thought that with these new machines, the chances of, other issues developing post-surgery would be reduced tremendously. And so doing both wouldn't be a problem. But we'll come back and talk about that. Meanwhile, we have Sunitra who has a question. The chair sitting exercise builds your quads, but is it bad for someone with stage 3 or 4 osteoarthritis of the knee? Will it cause ligament strain?
Good question.
Chair sitting exercise, can you just briefly describe that to us?
Okay. Basically, when you sit, when you mention chair sitting exercise, it basically means you sit in the chair, you pick yourself up, and then you sit down back, and then you pick yourself up again, and then you sit down. So basically, it's from sitting to standing, standing to sitting.
Right.
Okay. So that essentially builds the quadriceps on both your knees. With good and strong quadriceps, the knee cap or patella, we call it, alignment becomes better. It doesn't wobble so much. It keeps. It becomes more steady, and the knee is being able to support by the muscle well. Now, will that make my knee worse? Now, if I already have severe knee pain, bending and straightening my knee, yes, it may worsen your knee. But if you completely stop doing these exercises, your knees are only going to get worse. So the good way to do it is, instead of doing 15, 20 minutes, cut down to 5 to 10 minutes and you build from there. That is one way of, doing a progression of those exercises.
Okay. Another question here from John. My 53-year-old wife has developed a bone spur on her heel. She can no longer exercise comfortably. Do you have any recommendations for her?
Bone spur on the heel brings to a patient to a diagnosis of what we usually call plantar fasciitis. Now, if you treat plantar fasciitis by exercise, ice pack, stretching, it doesn't necessarily need to have surgery done.
Okay. Well, I have both. So my advice is every time you see a step, stand on it and hang your heels down. Am I correct, Dr.?
Yes.
Dr. Sohail? That works tremendously because every time I come to steps, I remember and then I do it because I know doing it diligently on a daily basis is very difficult, but that's the least you can do for your heel, actually.
The other thing that some people do is get a wedge board.
Yes.
There are nice wedge boards available. You can buy those wedge boards and put it in your living room. And whilst you're watching telly, you could stand on the wedge board for 5 to 10 minutes each time, twice a day. Your plantar fasciitis will disappear soon.
Okay, that didn't work for me because I have ants in the pants. I can't stand for 5-10 minutes in front of the TV, Dr. Sohail. So the steps work. Every time I see stairs, it reminds me, Mira, stretch your heels, and it really helps. Yes, it does.
That works.
Yeah. So we'll come back and continue the discussion on osteoarthritis. If you have a question for Dr. Sohail, give us a call. The number is 7733 2900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. It's Health and Living. I am Meera Sivasothi. On the line with me, Dr. Sohail Suresh, consultant orthopedic surgeon from Sunway Medical Center. We're discussing living with osteoarthritis. You've gone through some very interesting points, Dr. Sohail. Let's talk about treatment options. You did say, like, for an example, total knee replacements, you would recommend it one at a time. There are side effects to total knee replacements for some people. But, you know, haven't there been, developments in this area where you have more, more precision when it comes to carrying out total knee replacements? I mean, new machines. I mean, everyone's talking about new machines. Is there a possibility of reducing some of that?
Yeah, okay. I think one of the major concerns in doing joint replacements is all joint replacements or this prosthesis that we put in patients has a lifespan. The existing lifespan is used to be 15 to 20 years. Now it's gone up to somewhere between 20 to 30 years. So it's almost a lifetime surgery. So over the years, there's lots of research that's been done to make things better. Better in the sense that so that these implants can be put in once. And so if I put in somebody who is 50 years old, it will last the patient up to 80, 85 years old. So there have been implants which have been made gender specific. We have got implants specifically to cater for female patients with their morphology of the bone, which is much smaller, less broader. We have got custom made implants for patients who have a very specific kind of bone. Maybe they are born with some congenital abnormality which makes their bone short and very much narrower. So the available off-the-shelf sizes may not fit them. And then we have implants to cater for, if you look at a person's knee joint, the joint has got an inner side and an outer side. So somebody may have a unicondylar or a partial knee replacement. Then we had implants with different materials. And somewhere in 2005, I was involved in doing one of the first few computer-aided surgeries in the country, where we decided to use computers to help us to decide what angles to put these implants in. So now we are at the forefront, and I'm thankful to God for being given this opportunity to participate in this robotic surgery, where the surgery is done even with much more precision. So how does a robotic knee replacement differ from a conventional joint replacement? So both of them, at the end of the day, we put in implants, one on the femur side, the thigh bone side, one on the leg bone side, and then there's one more, what you call, on the cap or the patella. Now, in the good old days, when we do this surgery, we do the x-rays, we calculate the angles using rulers and devices, and then we use specific jigs, and we adjust the measurements and the jigs, and then we put it on the bone, and then we make the resections on the bone, and then finally we put these implants inside. Today, the same x-rays are done. The parameters from the x-rays are fed to the computer. The computer digests these parameters, and then it's fed into the robot. And the robot will now decide that which is the angle that the patient would do best, or which angles, which alignments will fit the patient best. But again, the surgery is not done by the robot. The surgeon has to be there. The surgeon has to open up the skin, make the skin incision, clear all the bone spurs, do the ligament to balance the ligaments. And then the robot arm is brought into the picture of the field of surgery. And then the robot puts the cutting position accurately on the bone. And then the saw is held by the surgeon to cut. So in this way, there is very little error. There is no eyeballing. Some of these robots even help to prevent us from accidentally cutting ligaments, which are probably sometimes behind or obscured by a part of the bone. So all this is taken away by the robot.
Right.
And also, this allows the surgery to be done in a slightly smaller incision, lesser blood loss, quicker rehabilitation, and put the implants in the best alignment possible. So then comes this question: why put so much emphasis in putting this alignment, these implants in the right alignment? So if you look back at all the journals and all the studies and researches that have been done, if implants which are put in the most accurate position, let's say between 1 to 3 degrees within the accepted range, those implants will last way much longer than the implants which are put slightly off. Having said that, most experienced surgeons like my colleagues and myself, who have been in the field of joint replacement for almost 20 years, would usually be able to do this surgery with very little margin of error. But there's always an outlier that happens in between the cases that we do. But with this robotic, it's completely reproducible, and you get the accurate, the most accurate position of the implants.
Okay. You know, Dr. Sohail, if, you know, we do indeed need total knee replacement or even hip replacements, right? What are some of the crucial questions we should be asking about this surgery? Implants, for an example, because I know there are many types. How would we know which ones to use, which ones not to use? What are the benefits if I choose a more expensive one versus one that's very ordinary? You know, what are some of the questions?
Okay. All right. Okay. Let's go first with whether when I need a knee replacement, do I need a partial knee or do I need a total knee replacement?
Okay.
So if if my the entire of my knee is not affected, only part of my knee is affected. And if I'm, this is having said that all medical management has failed and the patient really now needs to look at surgery, yeah? So because not everyone who has osteoarthritis needs surgery.
Yes.
So if you come to a point of surgery, I need to ask myself or ask the consultant who's looking after me, do I need a full knee replacement, which is a total knee replacement, or do I need a partial knee replacement? So if I need only a partial knee replacement, why do I need to go and do a total? The advantage of a partial is you stay in the hospital for 3 to 4 days at the max. Your rehabilitation is within 2 weeks. You start driving. You start walking around. You don't need to use a walking frame. You use a walking stick. The incidence of fat embolism, incidence of deep vein thrombosis is so much lower. And the recovery is so good that the patients, almost immediately after the surgery, the next 2 days, the patient starts walking almost like they've never had surgery. So that's one advantage. So that's partial knee replacement. Then I have to ask myself whether I need an implant that really has got a very long lifespan. Example, if I'm 50 years old or I'm 48 years old, of course, I want to have the best implant so that I can run the whole length of that journey in my life. If I'm 75 years old, I don't need a very sophisticated implant. I need something that can take me 20 years. Most knee replacement implants will take you there. So I don't need to spend another 10,000 Malaysian ringgit just to get that additional benefit. For what purpose, I ask myself. Then I have to ask myself what kind of rehab that I'm going to look at, whether I'm going to have a short rehabilitation, long rehabilitation, what are the risks that are involved in me choosing this implant. Now, the other thing that I need to ask is, do I need an implant that allows me to flex my knee to the fullest, or what we call as a high flex knee? Most Asian patients do quite at least a little bit of kneeling, squatting, either for prayer, either for house chores. Unlike the Western population patients, if a patient walks into your clinic in Australia or in UK, they don't bother asking you whether can I kneel with this knee. But in Malaysia, most patients will ask you, say, doc, can I kneel? Can I pray in the usual manner with this knee implant? So then if you have that aspirations of wanting to kneel and wanting to do at least a half squat, then you need a high flex implant.
Yeah. Okay. All right. With more and more people obese in this country, Dr. Suhail, and they're getting younger and younger, do you foresee more people needing joint replacements earlier on in life?
Yes. That is a very, very significant problem. We are beginning to see a lot more patients who are obese and who need to have knee replacements. In some instances, what we do is if I see somebody who is 40 years old and patient has got severe knee osteoarthritis, I'll tell them one of the first few ways of getting the knee corrected is by losing weight. And if they have tried everything else possible, sometimes we get them referred to our colleagues to get them to see physicians to reduce their weight, or some of them are sent off to do bariatric surgery,
right,
so that their knees, the load on their knees is much lesser. Each kilogram they lose from their body weight, they lose 4 kilograms of burden on their knee. So that's how much it translates to. So someone, when some of them will go and have their bariatric surgery and come back and tell you, say, look, my knee was bothering me so badly, but now I'm okay. So for someone who is 40 years old, very few, or in fact, most surgeons will turn the patient away from a knee replacement surgery. We usually try not to do it for such patients, because if you do it at that age, if the implant lasts them 20 years, at 60, they need to come in for a revision. And when they come in for revision, every revision is a complex surgery. When you take off the old implants and you put in a new set of implants, there's significant bone loss, there's significant ligament loss, the surgery takes longer, the risks are greater. So we try and delay the surgery as much as possible before we do it for them.
Okay, all right. We have a very quickly, Dr. Zewell, we've got many questions coming through. Someone's asking, I suffered a partial ACL and MCL elongation about 7 years ago in my early 20s. I was advised to undergo physical therapy, which I did instead of surgery. Sorry, physiotherapy. What are the chances of me suffering from a re-injury or even osteoarthritis? Also, do I eventually need to opt for surgery in the event of knee instability?
The easiest way to answer this question is the patient should ask themselves whether their knee is stable or unstable. So if you have got significant instability, that means you have not sorted your problem. And if you have not sorted your problem, every time your knee is unstable, it is going to damage the cartilage. And hence, this patient will eventually end up having a knee replacement because of multiple injuries to the cartilage. So the quick answer is, ask yourself whether your knees are stable. If your knees are not stable, you need to get something done.
Okay. Can osteoarthritis be reversed?
No. Unfortunately not. Once it sets in, it's a way forward.
Okay. All right. What about supplements? May is asking, do supplements help?
Yes, do your research, get the right supplement and the right dosing of the supplement. Some of the supplements really help. Help in the sense that it delays the progression. It does not stop, but it delays the progression. Okay. Instead of losing 1 millimeter a year, 0.1 millimeter a year, you probably lose 0.05 millimeters a year.
Okay, with all the people, Dr. Suhail, I find that the mistake a lot of people make is when they are diagnosed with osteoarthritis, family members tend to tell the older people to move less. Sit down, don't move so much because, you know, you're using your joints too much. There's more risk with joint pain. Is there, you want to dispel that misconception?
Interesting. You see, when I went to med school, but more than 25 years ago, the teaching is, if you have osteoarthritis, if you can sit, why stand? If you can walk, why run? You follow what I'm trying to say? So basically, at that point of time, the thought was, try and get the patient to reduce walking, try and get the patient to reduce standing. Simple question, if I'm 50 years old, how long am I going to stop walking? How long am I going to sit all my life? So, yes, you need to listen to your knees. You have to listen to your body. But at the same time, if you start sitting down and not moving, your joints will only become tight. And as years go by, they will become more and more tight. So you need to have a balance. The question here is balance. If you have a right balance, you'll be okay. So move. And once your knee is painful, if your joint tells you it's painful, you have to stop. Don't fight it too much. And then on a better day, get yourself moving again.
Okay.
And the other thing is, do weightless exercises. Do exercises that you don't need to put weight on your knees. You can cycle, you can swim, you can walk in the pool. So those kind of exercises.
Okay, not to be mixed up with weight-bearing exercises when you have osteoarthritis versus weight-bearing exercises, which is needed, to prevent,
osteoporosis.
Yes, that's right, osteoporosis, yes. And all of that.
Yes.
We have an interesting question. Oh, my goodness, 65-year-old Belinda is saying, I climb steps, I go to Batu Caves and I can do it twice, up and down. It takes 9 minutes per each climb, and Belinda is 65 years old. Is that good for prevention of osteoarthritis? I'm okay after each climb except for a bit of back pain. What's your advice?
Excellent, Belinda. You've got good joints. You have inherited good genes. Good for you. But not everyone would be able to do that. So if she's comfortable, her knees are not painful, and she's 65, and she can do it in 9 minutes up and in one way, well be. But I just want to bring another picture. I've got patients who are 35 years old, 40 years old, who do 25 flights of stairs as a form of exercise. They walk up their 25th floor building or 30th floor building as a form of exercise and down at least once a day. And each time when they do that, at the end of the week, their knees are painful, swollen, and then they take lots of painkillers, and then they push themselves the following week. From the way I describe, you already know that there's something wrong with you for doing that. Your knees are already painful. That means it's already telling you that I can't take this. You're abusing me. I always tell my patients, if I was the knee, I would have made a police report.
So the no pain, no gain principle doesn't apply here at all, not for the joints.
Not for the joints. I tell you why, Meera, because a simple example, if I do it and my knee is painful, what happens is, remember in earlier part of the talk, I spoke about the synovium, the lining of the joint.
Yep.
That lining will start producing chemical mediators inside the joint. And those chemical mediators, apart from the fluid, has got material chemicals that will start damaging or causing inflammation to the cartilage. Then the cartilage softens, the cartilage breaks, and then the problem starts. So when it's painful, you have to stop, you have to slow down, ice the knee, rest the knee, elevate the leg, and give it some time.
Would you have a message for us?
Move, please move. But when you are moving, always listen to your joint. Listen to your knee. If your knee tells you don't do it, please don't do it. I want to say something else before I go. Now, many a times we find patients delaying the treatment. When I ask them, why did you wait for so many years and not do your knee joint? And they will tell you that, you know, I heard somebody said, you know, my knees are painful. They had a surgery and the surgery didn't go well. Or, you know, I'm just too frightened. And I said, have you spoken to someone in your past 30 years of having your knee pain? He said, no, I've never spoken to anyone. So my answer is very simple. Speak to someone. Speak to a professional person. Get the person to show you your x-rays, explain to you. Because if you keep thinking that you are going to come off this without any problem, you have probably lost years in your life. That brings me to a very interesting patient whom I recently, a patient's relative whom I recently met when I went for my booster jab. This was a lady who had a knee replacement with me about 20 years ago. Her daughter-in-law met me and she said, and I asked her, I said, how's your mom-in-law now? She said, oh, yes. Mom-in-law did very well, but unfortunately, she recently passed away from pancreatic cancer. I said, oh, I'm so sorry. And how was her knee at the time? She said, doc, her knee was one of the best things for her. She survived the surgery. She did well with her knees at the age of 65. And at 85, she died of pancreatic cancer. And her answer was to everyone she met, if only I had done my knees earlier, I would have had a better quality of life. So if your knees are bad and already at the stage of needing surgery, get the surgery done. You will do well. Your quality of life will improve. Your mobility will be better. You will be a much more happier person. You will be able to see the sun. You will be able to see the flowers in your garden. You will be able to go out and meet with your children and your grandchildren and enjoy your life. Don't stay in the room. Don't stay in your house because your knees are bad.
Thank you very much, Dr. Sohail. Dr. Sohail Suresh, consultant orthopedic surgeon from Sunway Medical Center, speaking to us about living with osteoarthritis on Health and Living BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.